This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. This is episode 224. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, Marcia Kulak will be here for our education segment to share more advice about preparing for the season. And first, we hear from Irene Du in Area 5 about the Jump Judge volunteer videos that were released this past fall, as well as plans for other educational videos and what else is in the works this year for the volunteer program. Welcome to the podcast, Irene. This is the first time you've been on.
Yes, thank you, Chris. I'm glad to be on and happy to tell everyone about the volunteer committee work and especially the Jump Judge video and some of the upcoming videos that we're going to produce.
Well, this is fabulous. Okay, so where shall we start with the work of the volunteer committee? Because you've been involved with that now for the last few years. Talk a little bit about your involvement.
I actually stumbled on the volunteer committee. A friend of mine said, hey, the USDA has just created a new volunteer committee and you do a lot of work with volunteers. It would be nice if you could kind of get involved and talk to them. So I got in touch with the chairs at that time and just said, hey, I'd like to get more involved. And one thing led to the other and suddenly I'm on the committee. It's been a great journey and I enjoy working on the committee and kind of developing programs that help volunteers across the country. And then in 2017, as a member of the committee, I applied for an educational grant at the USDA, and that led to we were awarded the grant, and then that led to the creation of the Jump Judge videos.
Well, we should go back a little bit because I'd love for our audience to know about your involvement in the sport, because you've done all these things. You've created these videos we're going to talk more about, Irene, and through your work as a volunteer there at Pine Hill near Bellevue in Texas. But you are also an eventer, so you do see both sides of what's needed to be a volunteer, all the different aspects of volunteering, of course, and you're the volunteer coordinator there. So tell everybody how you got into the sport and the horses that you event now.
Well, I got into the sport because I started riding with a trainer in the Austin, Texas area, and I just wanted to ride, and I did not realize she was an eventing coach. And I went with a group of hers and we went out cross country on a school horse. And I was hooked the first time I went out cross country. I said, this is what I want to do. And never looked back. I've had several horses over the years and I've competed up through training level. I had a gray gelding that was just amazing. He would jump anything I asked him to. And we ended up doing a training 3-day. A classic 3-day event, which was just kind of the highlight of my whole eventing career so far. He had to be retired because we were schooling prelim and he had really bad front feet and he could not handle the higher jumps. I currently have two horses. One is a 26-year-old gelding. I got him when he was 19 and the top of our career was the novice championships at the American Eventing Championships. He was 23 and we placed ninth at novice. And that was an amazing achievement, especially given his age. He'll be 27 this year and I'm still riding him. I'm still jumping him. And he doesn't think he's 27. He thinks he's 10 years old. And he's still going strong, staying healthy. And I'll ride him as long as he tells me he wants to do this. He's my old trooper. You know, he's an amazing horse. Then I bought a 5-year-old last year. He'll be 6 this year. And he's supposed to be my older replacement. And he's got big shoes to fill because I keep telling him every day, you need to measure up to Ace, the older horse. And you need to be as good as him and learn from him. So he's my next event horse. And I have no idea how far up the levels I'll go. I'm just enjoying the journey with him right now.
Now, you told me that you've been eventing now for about 20 years and you've got into volunteering. And as I said, you've become the volunteer coordinator there at Pine Hill in Texas. What was it that steered you into volunteering? Clearly, you love the sport, but you understood also from a rider and owner's perspective what it takes to be a volunteer.
Yes, and that really helps me when I'm, working on the committee or making the videos is I know what the competitors need and how they, you know, competitors, well, as, for me as a competitor, I'm a very nervous competitor. And it really helps me when I have a volunteer who's calm and tells me exactly what I need to do and really understands, you know, my anxiety and just calmly helps me so that I can be where I need to be when I need to be there. And I started volunteering at Pine Hill and because I wanted to help out. You know, I would be there the whole weekend and I would have pockets of time when I could help. So I started helping and doing, I've done pretty much every job there is and just putting in my time and helping out in the office because I'm really good at organizing stuff. And then about 8 years ago, you know, the organizer passed away suddenly and I stepped in to help the his spouse to organize the volunteers. And I just slowly took over that job and just became the volunteer coordinator for Pine Hill. And then a few years ago, I approached the organizer and I said, I would like to create some videos for them. So, but that's kind of getting on further down on your way you want to go. So I'll stop and let you continue.
Well, that transitions very nicely into my next topic, obviously, was about the you mentioned that that you got a grant, an education grant, a couple of years ago now for this video. You came up with the idea of a video for jump judges. So let's hear about that.
Yes, as a member of the volunteer committee, we USDA was awarding some grants in the summer of 2017, and we talked as a committee and decided to put forward a proposal to develop the jump judge video for the USDA. That has been something that a lot of organizers and volunteer coordinators have needed. And there was an old jump judge video, but it hadn't been updated. So all the rules have changed. And there's just been a lot of changes in the old video. A lot of it wasn't applicable before, so it needed to be updated. So we put together a proposal. USDA, we awarded one of the three grants that the USDA approved. And that was in the fall of 2017. And, you know, we put together the script and develop about a 30-minute video, and it covers everything that you need to know to be a jump judge, starting from why you need to be a jump judge, you know, what you need to do to get prepared, what are the different things you need to encounter as you're jump judging, you know, how do you score refusal, circle, runouts, what do you do if there's a fall at your jump? What do you do? There's a special instance, like you have to put a hold on course, for example. And then we end up with thanking them and encouraging them to continue volunteering. So it really was a soup to nuts video for jump judges. And we recorded the video at three locations on site. We went to Windura Farms at Pennsylvania, Boyd Martin's place, and then we went to Rocking Horse and recorded during an event. And then we also did some recording at the USDA office in Virginia.
How would anyone who wants to volunteer, how would they find this video?
It is on the USDA website. If you navigate to the website and you go to competitions and then there's a volunteer subpage, it is linked from that page. The USDA office also sent out the link to all the organizers. And, so that's how they would find it. And we did also post it with our, we did a presentation at the convention last year, and we sent out the link to all the people who attended as well. So we're definitely, the USDA website would be the main place to go to get it.
Wonderful. Well, that we'll send obviously everyone to useventing.com to look for that. And I'd like to hear also about any future educational videos that you have lined up then. What is the committee discussing at the moment by way of videos, Irene?
Well, one of the things the committee was always committed to doing is to create instructional videos for all the key positions, all the key volunteer positions. We knew that the jump judge video was just the first step. And we, so we actually, as a committee, asked the USEA if they would fund additional videos. And they actually gave us a 5-year funding budget to produce, continue producing videos for the key positions. So our goal for 2019 is to produce 2 or 3 videos, and we haven't finalized which positions we would create the video for, but we're looking towards the ring steward, warm-up stewards, and possibly bit check. Because what we're trying to do is trying to prioritize to the positions that we feel are the most needed by the organizers. And that might also be the most, quote, complicated for new volunteers. So we're actually meeting this Thursday as a committee, and we'll finalize the list to see what we end up doing this year. But it'll be 2 or 3 videos. And like I said, we're leaning towards warm-up stewards and bit check.
Okay, good to know. And is there any other work that you'd like to share with our members here, Irene, about the volunteer committee? What's on your agenda for this year?
Actually, we are working on a volunteer coordinator guide, and I'm putting it together with one other member of the committee, and we're going to unveil it to the rest of the committee this Thursday when we meet. So what this will be is, it's kind of a instruction and resources for someone who's either working as a volunteer coordinator or who is a new volunteer coordinator. Okay, we see that there may be some. What we've heard from the organizers and from volunteer coordinators that they would like more information, you know. So the guide is going to be on a website, which will eventually be linked from the USEA website. And what we'll have is links to all of the videos that we have, all of the resources, as well as some tips and tricks on doing the volunteer coordinator job. So that's one of the big things we're doing this year. We are also we also have a lot of resources in addition to the videos for the volunteer positions. Like, we have checklists for the positions, so we will include all of that in the volunteer coordinator guide. The committee is also working on a volunteer rewards program, where we will, and we haven't finalized it, so I don't want to say too much about it yet, but it's an additional way to reward volunteers for the work that they've done throughout the years.
Well, that sounds a wonderful amount of resources then for any volunteers who are currently volunteering or are thinking of volunteering, and they can all find that, of course, on the website at useventing.com. Well, Irene, is there anything else that you would like to share with us today? Because this is tremendous to know about all these different resources.
Let everyone know we love our volunteers. We could not event. I could not compete if there were not any volunteers. So we love our volunteers. We encourage everyone to check out the volunteer site, the volunteer page on the USEA website. And please consider volunteering at the next event that's close to you. We won't have a sport without our volunteers. And the volunteer committee is, we are very committed to making things as easy as possible so that people know what they need to do when they volunteer. So, you know, and if there's anybody who has input to the committee, please reach out to us and let us know. We're here for the volunteers. So just, you know, we want to do everything we can to grow the volunteer base, to make it easy for the organizers, the volunteer coordinators, and the volunteers to do what they do.
And that's very encouraging, and I hope people will go to the website and learn more about the opportunities that there are volunteering in your favorite sport here at useventing.com. Where is your next competition, Irene?
Actually, it is this weekend. We have a schooling horse trials at Pine Hill this weekend, if the weather cooperates. It's supposed to be below freezing, so we're not sure yet. We do 8 shows at Pine Hill every year, and so the next, you know, we have one in January and February, and then April and May. So it's pretty busy.
Well, the very best of luck, and I hope the weather's on your side.
I hope so too. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you very much for taking the time to come on the program, Irene. And thanks for all you're doing for volunteers.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Well, joining me again to further our education series is Marcia Kulak. Marcia, welcome back.
Thank you again for having me.
Well, we got off to a great start with the fundamentals last time, the management in the barn, all the things that you need to go over at the start of the season, or even before the season starts. This is a great time to do it. But there's a second element of this. We talked about what to do in the barn, but now we need to look at the schedule for the season.
Yes, and so briefly, we can discuss a little bit about what we talked about. Organizing with your trainer, aligning the vet and the farrier, the physio, putting that together so that your horse is ready to go for the season, shoeing, saddle fit, bridle, and bidding. All of that's going to be an ongoing process. And keep in mind that throughout the season, you're going to have to tweak those things. Just because you had your horse evaluated by your veterinarian or your chiro in January doesn't mean that once you start competing, you don't have to do that again. And I think sometimes I have people come for a lesson and tell me, well, he always trots like this, or he's always a little different, the left canter to the right canter. So it's important for amateur riders and juniors to be aware that if your horse doesn't feel quite right, you know, is dramatically different on one lead than the other, or one diagonal than the other, or shows a lot of training resistance, that you may need to back up and revisit your veterinarian, have your trainer ride the horse, see if they don't feel the same thing. So I want to stress that it's important to start with this good spring tune-up or winter tune-up, but it's an ongoing process. It doesn't end just because you did it once in January and you're all set for the rest of the season. Weather conditions change, footing changes, your competition schedule increases, so you've got to be mindful that you have to keep on top of all those smaller details. But while you're planning your season, I think it's also very important to look at your riding and say, what needs tweaking? How's my dressage? How's the cross country? How am I doing in the show jumping? And be really critical, really honest with yourself about what your weaknesses are and how you might go forward so that you improve on those weaknesses. So let's take an example. Let's say that you do really very good dressage, but you forget your test occasionally because under pressure you have a little trouble with that, or you forget your courses, or you have a lot of anxiety about cross country, either making the time or a particular jump. We have to keep in mind that eventing is a very mental sport along with a very physical sport. So riders, particularly amateurs, who many have real careers other than riding and ride for fun, they also have to understand that from a safety perspective, you've got to get yourself mentally and physically fit enough to do the job that you are trying to do. So that's another good thing to sit down and discuss with your trainer. If you have a weakness that you know needs help, how do you go about improving that so that you're not just spinning your wheels and doing the same darn thing that you did the season before? I often recommend that you look into Daniel Stewart or Laura King. There are a lot of options out there for mental help and giving yourself positive reinforcement to be able to enjoy the sport more, obviously be safer, and probably most importantly, have fun. You know, and I think the fun factor is a very important thing, but you have to take real steps to do that.
Well, the other thing we haven't touched on yet, and there's so much to cover here, of course, but is not just the mental fitness and mental preparation, Marcia, but also the physical preparation. You know, maybe you had an injury last season and you've worked on it over the winter, but when it comes to that first competition and your body responds differently when you're actually competing and things can change. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a wonderful point, Chris. I think, again, physical fitness is really important and you have to ride. You need time in the saddle. And I really encourage my adult amateur people to understand that there is no substitution for that, although additional physical activity is definitely necessary, but you must spend time in the saddle. So that's an important thing that you have to recognize. Good riding principles are relatively simple, but the application of those principles is what is the challenge. So more than just getting on and going for a hack or a little bit of a trot set, well, that's very important. Are you actually able to go through a dressage test and maintain your position statement and your balance and your body control so you can guide your horse through all the necessary things in a dressage test that come up quickly and then complicated by the fact that you then have cross country and show jumping. So many events today are one days, and there's a lot that happens when you think about it. You generally have to walk the courses. You have to get up very early in the morning to get to the event. So you start to take into consideration that your day at a competition is probably physically much more demanding than your average day at the office, depending on what you do. So I do think it's important for people to understand that if you expect your horses to be fit and ready to go, you have to have the same level of expectation for yourself. So that can be from biking, walking, running. I encourage people to mimic walking the cross-country course. Don't always go somewhere where you walk on a perfectly level surface with no hills, but walk out in the country if you can. Use the hills somewhere in your neighborhood if you can go where you can walk up and down a grade. I think we underestimate all the mental and physical stresses that are presented to us on a competition day. So very, very important to be sure that the physical side of your riding is in place before you start competing. I also think that it can be very valuable to try to go to some smaller, less pressured schooling shows. Cross-country schooling, or now you can go to competitions that are cross-country events or horse trials, but they're not recognized. So you get to go through the three phases, but perhaps in a less pressured form. So there you're mentally getting some stress and pressure and physically getting some added exercise, but you're not under the same kind of pressure that you might be in a full-fledged USEA, USEF recognized event. So you have to plan your calendar. And that requires sit down, communicate with your trainer, and figure out what's the best program to get you to your first event.
And I think another aspect, I think pride sometimes gets in the way, and we don't always confront this, but is confidence, especially with the adult amateur masseur who doesn't spend as much time in the tack and doesn't ride as many different types of horses. Maybe they came off a fall last season. Maybe something happened that didn't go well with their horse and it wasn't going the way that they had hoped, and their confidence is hit a little bit. Not enough to frighten them off going again when the season comes around again, but it just dents their confidence a little bit.
Right.
And that's okay, isn't it?
It is. And I think that there's a real reluctance. You touched on it, pride. You know, eventers are strong people in general. And so sometimes it's hard for us to say, gee, I am a little bothered by something. I always talk to my students about that. And I teach in a very encouraging way. And that's certainly something for adults, juniors, everyone to be aware of. What kind of learner are you, and what is the best way to get to you mentally? And addressing that, you know, if you have a trainer that perhaps tends to have a strong voice, or in your feeling yells a lot and you're not quite sure, and that creates additional pressure, then you have to figure out with that individual, or perhaps finding another trainer to help you, but you have to figure out how you can overcome that through positive mental steps. In other words, the brain really doesn't understand don't. So if you say, I don't want you to do that in five strides, I want you to do it in six, five strides is often the thing that's going to stick in someone's mind. So if a trainer says to them, I'd like you to do that in a quiet or six strides so you don't get there in five and a half where the horse runs off at the end, find positive reinforcements to help people be able to stay in the moment with their riding. I also think that most of us are our own worst enemy. We're very self-critical. And I tell everybody to take their critic and leave it at home. Leave your critic at home and come to the barn with a open, positive attitude so that you're not already defeating yourself before you ever put your foot in the iron. So I encourage people, think positive. Think about what you want to do. If you make a little mistake, I have a little saying, it's like water off a duck's back. That image is very powerful. Try to embrace whatever little mistake you might make and figure out what you need to do differently to overcome it. And that's a mental mindset, and it requires training. You don't do that automatically. And I cannot stress enough, I know we are all our own worst critics, and we have to find a way to also be our best cheerleader. So I think those are some very important steps to be aware of and to take. I also encourage people to really make every ride count. Sometimes at home, you know, because you have another chance, you can go jump that line again, or you can go across a diagonal or do a 20-meter circle or your stretchy circle. You can do it over and over and over again. But if you raise your standard at home to where your expectation of what you do requires only one or two tries, you know, a little bit of tweaking here, a little bit of tweaking there, if you are continually making the same mistake over and over again, you've got to find a different approach because clearly the one you're utilizing is not working. So it requires a lot of thinking, a lot of forethought in your riding, and hopefully you're in a training situation where these things are addressed and helped sorted out in a positive way.
And, you know, everybody has to remember when you're in sport, no matter what the sport is, that you're not always going to get the best result, but you can always put in your best effort.
Exactly. Oh, you just hit the nail on the head. I think that's really important. Every ride should count. Everything that you do, you should try to make count. Now, if you ride for pleasure and you just want to go for a trail ride, I'm all good with that. There are people who want to do that and enjoy the sport on a level that doesn't necessarily include competing. But if you're going to compete, if you're going to try and put forth the effort to do that, the money, the time, the commitment, then you really do need to discipline yourself and everyone around you to make it count in a positive way.
Well, just going back to the planning then, you're mm-hmm. in the early part of the year right now, and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to start the season wherever, at Rocking Horse, Pine Top, wherever you want to go. Right. How far ahead do you plan, Marcy, or do you advise the amateurs particularly to plan their events, or do you just take it one show at a time? Obviously, with entries and deadlines, you've got right. to plan a little bit ahead of time, but how do you approach this in terms of reevaluation after each event, you know, and them being, and the riders being open to changing their mind and changing direction?
Well, I try to take it in 6-week increments. In other words, you go 6 weeks out and you back your schedule in. You can actually go much further than that. You could say, I'm here for the winter. Let's say you're in Florida for the winter and you're in Ocala and you're going to be there for 3 months. You can look at the entire 3-month period. But I think from point A, where you're starting your season, you should have, in my professional opinion, at least 4 to 6 weeks of preparation, which should include some schooling shows and obviously regular training prior to your first event. But I think if you give yourself a little bit of time frame out, you will have a more comfortable level rather than saying, oh my God, in 2 weeks I have to go somewhere and I've only ridden, you know, for the horse has been in training, real training for 3 weeks. You've got to be really careful about that. So my feeling is to take it kind of 6 weeks out. This is your goal at 6 weeks. So what do you need to do in weeks 1 through 5 to lead up to that? And what's realistic for people? Again, we touched on people who have full-time jobs. if you give yourself 6 weeks, that should give you enough time to adequately prepare around your job, your family life, whatever other things have to be included. A lot of amateur clients rely on their trainers to help prepare the horses. I want to be absolutely sure that I do the best job preparing the horse, so when the rider comes, the horse is already dialed in, ready to do the job. The rider will have a much easier time of it if the horse is already in gear and going. And I think you have to be aware, sometimes working students are riding your horses or people other than your trainer. That's a very delicate situation, but you need to be on top of your trainer and say, if I'm going to do it this way, I need my horse to be schooled by you on a very regular basis so that it is dialed in, ready to go, physically and mentally prepared for me when I have my lessons. So that's a subject that you need to take up and you need to be organized about so you feel comfortable when you get on your horse is ready for you. And I think that's a service that many professionals willingly provide because our sport is so full of adult amateurs who have other careers.
Now, the other important aspect, of course, to the planning is budget. Now, does the trainer help?
Correct.
Does it always help with that? How do you advise your students coming into, you know, the adult amateur particularly, how do you advise them to approach this and map it out?
Well, when you look at your six-week period or your entire summer, however you want to lay it out, but I think everybody has kind of a month-to-month budget. Again, that's another thing that is surrounded by pride, so it's very difficult. But that's up to a trainer to come and sit someone down and say, all right, what is it that you'd like to do? What are your goals, and how can I help you fulfill those within the structure of your budget and your time? And when you, as a professional, put that out, I think you put that person at ease. You help them ease into a topic that is historically difficult. If you say, you know, I can only do two events in a month, or maybe only one, or I can do a schooling show and a horse trials, particularly when you add in that you have the vet and the farrier and some of the things that we discussed the last time, there's going to be some additional expenses to prepare your horses. But I think having the trainer approach the budgeting aspect or helping them with what is realistic is very crucial, and it opens the door and hopefully makes someone feel at ease about discussing what their financial parameters are to be able to enjoy the sport but not become so stressed because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses, for instance. You know, you just have to do what is feasible for you as a person. And I think as a trainer, I always try to make my clients feel comfortable that they need to tell me what's possible and I'll help work within that budget. But it's certainly a topic that has to be discussed.
And you mentioned that keeping up with the Joneses, and so often peer pressure does come into it, especially for young riders who are ambitious, maybe only have one horse,
yeah,
and some of their friends have got more than one horse. It's, I guess, a job for the trainer then just to rein them in a little bit and not to be overly ambitious because they only have one horse, but they're out there to compete and keep up with their friends.
Yes, and I actually think that as a trainer, you can help keep all of your students on a little bit of an equal basis. In other words, I offer full service care, training. Most of my adult amateur clients would like that because their careers and lives are so busy in other directions that their riding time to them is the most valuable thing they have. And when they do it, they want it to be right. So that's one aspect. But I do have amateurs who enjoy handling their horses and helping out with that. But on the junior side of it, I try to make it that everybody is cut from the same cloth. They all help. They all muck stalls. They all pick paddocks. It makes a difference when you level the playing field as a professional. And if I'm willing to go out and do any chore on the farm that's required, I will do and regularly do. And I think that sets the standard. Now, certainly not every professional is in a position to do that, and I recognize that. However, a professional can set the tone of teamwork, sportsmanship. You know, what are you really doing this for? So sure, we all want to be successful, but there has to be a level of humility and leadership and teamwork that must go into it. And I think that that starts at the top. And if your trainer can manage everybody's kind of temperaments and desires and help those people who maybe have a bad weekend, as well as being equally happy for those who have a successful weekend. I just think that's the level that the professional puts in their program, that they manage those things very carefully and make everyone feel important. And that those young riders, for instance, that may only have one horse, if I have 8 or 10 horses in the barn, I'll encourage them, if they can, to ride a couple of mine and help them with those, be able to hack out or do some of the conditioning or even perhaps some of the work. It just depends on the situation. But, you know, ambition, work ethic, humility, those are things that I find much more important than just dollars and cents and even talent. And I think that historically in our sport, the people who really are hardworking, dedicated, they will be successful. And I also believe that many of the young riders never go to the 4-star level, 5-star level, never become international riders, but that this experience that they have as a young rider will set them up for whatever they're going to do in life. So there's way more importance to what eventing brings to the equation for you as a person than just you as a rider. And I think if in your barn you promote those ideals, you'll keep everyone in tow without it being that difficult. But again, that's something has to start from the top down.
Yeah, so important, all of those things. And you touched on humility. Empathy, of course, is very, very important. And sometimes we lose sight of that because we're so competitive. And being empathetic to your fellow riders, especially in the same barn. You're all in there to have fun, right?
Yes, and being empathetic to your horses. You know, when you're competitive, sometimes your competitive nature overrides your horsemanship. And I, as a horsewoman, always want to try to show that what's in it for the horse? Am I doing the best I can for them to get the most out of them? And I think that if you lead by that example and you don't tolerate temper tantrums or, you know, mild forms of abuse because someone is frustrated. And, you know, that's just part of the sport. That's part of life, actually. So it touches on what I said a minute ago, that this helps prepare you for what you're going to have to deal with in everyday life. And I say that emotional control is probably one of the most important components to being a successful event rider at any level. And I help my adult amateurs and my juniors learn that, learn emotional control. I don't want to know that you're frustrated out here because you just got an awkward distance or the horse trotted when it was supposed to be cantering and broke out of a circle in the dressage arena, whatever the case may be. I want you to show me that you can overcome that under pressure. And if you practice that mental control and stability at home, you are much more likely to have that, to be able to tap into that at a competition. But you have to practice those good skills at home.
Great advice. It's not what you go through, it's how you respond to those challenges as a rider and as a horse person.
Correct.
This is super educational, and I'm wondering if there's anything else you want to add to this, Marcia, for this particular segment.
Well, I think we've covered a lot. I hope that what these sessions do is bring to light some of the things, the tools that you can put in your toolbox so you can be safe, have fun, and be successful. And I think, you know, as a professional, that's certainly my goal. And I believe that eventing in general really promotes all of that. So hopefully we give people some tools and they can go out and put these things to use and have more success and obviously enjoy our incredible sport to the highest degree.
Absolutely. Then the season is about to start or has started in some places, so go out there and enjoy it. And Marcia will be back next time with another segment here on education. Marcia, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the program. It's always great to catch up with you. Do you have in mind what the next segment's going to be, or are we going to keep that a surprise?
I'm going to keep it a surprise.
All right, wonderful. Well, thanks again for your time. Always appreciate it.
Look forward to next week, Chris.
And our thanks again to Marcia and to Irene Du for coming on the show this week. Don't forget, if you missed an episode, you can go back and listen on the website at useventing.com to past episodes, and also download it from the iTunes podcast store or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time for another episode of the USEA's official podcast. In the meanwhile, don't forget to follow us on social media. That's at useventing. And do keep an eye on the website too for all the latest news at useventing.com. And if you're about to start your season, the very best of luck and enjoy your eventing.